the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Back at our microphones, Eddie B. Ellis, Jr. And Eddie is an ex-offender. He served 15 years in the prison system for a manslaughter charge in the District of Columbia. But the interesting thing about Eddie is that Eddie has been not just a commentator on life on the outside after prison. He has sort of been the commentator on life on the outside after prison. He's been before these microphones several times before. And I wanted to re-interview Eddie once again because I saw this. It was a brochure put out a little while ago. Out for Good is a short documentary about the life experiences of Eddie B. Ellis, Jr. upon returning home from prison. And this was a showing of the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. So he has his own documentary. He's been on the front page of the Washington Post. He's been on the front page of the Catholic Reporter. He's appeared before the Federal Communications Commission, ladies and gentlemen. He has been before congressional hearings. He is on the board of National Legal Aid and Defender Association. He has audio CDs out in terms of what we can do on the outside or what we do to hurt people on the outside. He's produced guides for ex-offenders in terms of how to readjust to society. And he's also trained our community supervision officers, what other places call parole and probation agents. He's also trained them in terms of what it is and the perceptions of a person on the outside. Eddie Ellis, welcome back to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. Sipes.
All right. You've got a whole wide array of all of these things that you have done throughout your time since you've been out of prison. You've been out of prison for 6 years, and you bring really unique perspectives in terms of what it's like to be out. The overwhelming majority, 99.9% of the people who come out of the prison system, they don't talk to anybody. Nobody interviews them. Nobody talks to them. And, you know, this whole issue of reentry, I mean, who's more important in terms of a voice than the people who actually have served time and getting life from their perspective? So what is life from your perspective? You've been out of the prison system for 6 years. What's the bottom line that the rest of us need to understand about people coming out of prison?
It's actually 5 years now, but it's very difficult for some of us to come home and actually open up to people, because especially for those of us who've been in for a long time. Like myself, I did 15 years. Most of my time has been in solitary confinement. And when you be in for that long, you feel like the system is against you. When you come home, you still feel the same way. So it's hard for you to open up for people that work for the system.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people that work for the system might be the same people that want to help you. But how can you open up to these people when you've been fighting against these people, or you feel that these people have been fighting against you your whole time in prison?
Well, that's the dichotomy in terms of an agency like ours, parole and probation, because we have programs for people coming out of the prison system, but we're also the people who put people back in the prison system. So that person coming out can go to a substance abuse program, can go to a mental health program, can go to an anger management program, and yet in the back of his or her mind, we can put them back in prison.
Yeah, people make choices, and that's the thing. People make choices that can land themselves back in prison. And if that's what you do, that's what's going to happen. And for me, I just chose to want to come home and do the right thing. I didn't know how I was going to do it because I've never been in prison before. Only thing I wanted to do was do the right thing, you know?
The national average is that 50% within 3 years go back to prison. That's a pretty astounding failure rate. So a lot of people are coming out of prison. We're talking over 730,000 people every year come out of state and federal prisons. 50% end up back in prison within 3 years. So that's an astoundingly high failure rate.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. And it's very sad. And you know, a lot of things, you know, lead these men and women back to prison. You know, a lot of people don't have nowhere to go. You know, it's hard for people to get jobs and a lot of other things. And I'm not making that many excuses for people. But my thing is, if you come home and you don't have anywhere to go, you know, a lot of times people end up doing the same thing that they used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to go to the street. I don't want to live in a homeless shelter. I didn't live in a homeless shelter before I went to the street. Why should I live in one now? You know, so it's a lot of different, you know, things that people have to do to adjust when they come home. And if you didn't know how to adjust before you went to prison, how do you expect them to adjust now?
Right. What was the secret to your success? What do you think was... I know you, from the very beginning in all of our conversations, you've said, I simply said to myself, I'm not going back. when I come out of the prison system. How many people have I talked to throughout my 24 years of dealing with folks coming out of the prison system who have told me they're not coming back, who ended up going back? So what was your secret?
Honestly, Mr. Sykes, I started before I came home. You know, I made my mind up that I need to change while I'm in prison. And once I started my changing there, things started to change for me as a person with inside of me. And I had the support of my family and my friends and my faith, you know. Okay. And I just believed in God that if I pray to God and do the right thing, good things would come to me. And when I came home, I continued to do the right things, you know, and reach out to people and help other people. And that's what I've been doing since.
Well, the list that I read is amazing in terms of, you know, congressional hearings, front page of the Washington Post, being the subject of this documentary, being on the board of Legal Aid and Defenders Association, training folks within the criminal justice system about what it's like to be a former offender. I mean, that's so unusual. I mean, that's so freaking unusual for the system to basically do what we're doing now, is to give you airtime to tell the rest of us what it is that we need to know about people coming out of the prison system. You've lived a fairly unusual life. Do you think you've had a successful transformation in terms of all the things that you've done? Do you think people are listening, or do you think people are just giving you lip service?
I think some people are listening. You know, I do a variety of things. You know, like when I go speak to schools, some of the kids write me letters and tell me how I've affected their life and the way that they think. And the same thing with some of the probation officers I've dealt with. You know, I remember the first training that I did, and, you know, I came in and I, you know, dressed up casually, and they actually thought that I was a consultant. And they didn't know who I was, and they had my life up on the board, and they was talking bad about me, you know. And I was sitting back laughing, and they finally found out who I was. And I told them, you know, don't worry about that. You know, that was constructive criticism. You know, and I explained to them what I'm doing now, and it was like they knew me after the fact. I'm so proud of you. Congratulations. And some of these people I still speak to, but Ms. Trotter really gave me the opportunity, you know, to come in the office and speak to, you know, other ex-offenders and talk to her team and stuff like that. And it really opened up the doors for me to understand what some of the CSOs go through on their side. And I wanted her to understand what we go through on our side.
Right. Tasha Wright now is a supervisory community supervision officer. And we've had Tasha on this air before, in fact, with you. All right. The bottom line is that everybody has a stereotype of you. If they know nothing at all about you, if you're applying for an application, if you're just being introduced to somebody, if you say, did 15 years in prison, a good chunk of that in solitary, they're not going to touch you with a 10-foot pole. They're going to simply assume that you are a danger and a risk to public safety. And so there's a lot of people out there who just couldn't care less about, quite frankly, whether you prospered or went back to prison, or, to be really harsh about it, lived or died. People have stereotypes. We just mentioned them in terms of you before the community supervision officers. People have stereotypes about people coming out of the prison system. Is that stereotype justified?
Well, you know, people are allowed to feel what they feel. You know, is it always justified? No. You know, because sometimes people don't understand the in-depthness of people's situations and why certain things took place. You know, because you have people out here fighting against people that's at war. So are they justified to say that's, you know, what happened to them should have happened to them? I don't think that that's justified for people to say that, because people are fighting for our country. But do those people have to agree with their reason of fighting? They don't have to agree with that. But I don't think you should agree that our men and women should be hurt. You know, and I just want people to understand, when men and women come home from prison, we need for them to be helped. Because if they don't be helped, you may be one of the people that may be victimized next.
Well, we do know this much. The research is pretty clear. The more people are involved in programs, the less they recidivate, the less crimes, the fewer crimes they commit, the less burden they place on society. They don't have to go back to the prison system. I mean, states all over the country are facing huge budget deficits, and they're now starting to take a look at reentry programs from the standpoint of reducing the flow of people coming back into the prison system. And through that, they can save themselves hundreds of millions of dollars, and they can save themselves literally thousands of crimes. But again, to the average person out there, they have to deal with their school. They have to deal with their elderly mother. They have to deal with people in poverty. They have to deal with unemployment. People coming out of the prison system are way down at the bottom of the list in the minds of most people, right?
Yeah, in a lot of ways they are. But like I say, I think the system can set a lot of things up. If you have HVAC systems or programs that's in prison, why can't you set it up for when these men and women are coming home where they can come straight out to HVAC companies?
Yeah, you're talking about vocational programs across the board. Yeah.
If you already have construction companies set up,
right,
where I have an opening for 20 right now, where I have 20 that's coming home,
right,
and they send them straight to their company. They're working right when they come home. So it's not a gap. You know, and that be the problem a lot of times. A lot of these men and women don't know how to fill out applications. They don't know how to do a lot of these things. But when they know how to do it, a lot of them are willing to do it. You know, and these are the things. I spoke at Georgetown Death Penalty School yesterday, and a young lady was asking me, you know, what can she do? You know, and I was like, the first thing that you need to do is ask.
Right.
What you done?
Right.
What can I do to help?
Right.
You know, and that's what I do. And that's what I told her. I don't believe in equal justice. That's why there's so many loopholes in our justice system.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but you're the lawyer. I'm the person fighting for people in community to keep them from taking your purse,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that. So that's what I want to do. But if we can work together, we can be a dynamic team.
But how do we get past the stereotype? How do we get beyond that? What do we do besides doing these sort of radio programs and all the different things, the documentaries and the congressional hearings and speaking before the law school? I mean, your list is endless in terms of all of your outreach activities. What do we do as a society to basically convince the average taxpayer that it's in their best interest to fund occupational programs in prison, to fund mental health programs in prison, to fund drug treatment programs in prison, and to have these programs follow that person when they get out of prison, follow them into the community? That's what the criminological community wants. That's what the criminological community says is going to save states hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars. That's what the criminological community says is going to save thousands of people from being victimized, yet there's not a lot of people listening to that message.
Well, I'm not a statistic guy, but I tell you this. If you find somebody that's very good with statistics and can put it on the table and show taxpayers what can happen to their money one way or the other, well, you can save money by doing this and you can lose money by not doing this,
mm-hmm,
it can show a lot of people. Because I can rest assured that a lot of people don't want to pay too much tax money,
yeah,
by not doing something.
Right.
You know, and this is the problem. That a lot of stuff... a lot of people can save money with these programs,
mm-hmm,
in place.
Mm-hmm.
But when the programs are not in place, we're losing money.
Right.
You know, and that's what a lot of people need to understand.
I'm going to give out the website for Eddie Ellis, One by One. It's ONEBY1INC.org. OneByOneIncorporated.org. Eddie's email address is Eddie Ellis, EDDIEELLIS_EBE@yahoo.com. Those will be in the show notes, and we're going to talk about that throughout the program. We'll give those addresses again, and again, they're going to be in the show notes. All right, so, you know, the bottom line in all of this is that, you know, the criminological community says we should be doing this, and you say we should be doing this. We said a little while ago that 50% of all people after 3 years go back to the prison system, but 50% don't. And in the 24 years that I've been doing this, you know, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who have been incarcerated, who have been incarcerated for serious crimes, who are now taxpayers, not tax burdens, who are now taking care of their kids, who are now responsible parts of the community. But the average person doesn't see that. All the average person hears on the radio at night, the television program, the 6 o'clock news, and reads in the newspaper about ex-offenders do this or ex-offenders do that in terms of more criminal activity. I was watching, the A&E channel. I think they have a program called Hard Time talking about people in the prison system. So if if that person sits and watches that program, this national program, and he's an employer, I'm pretty sure that he's not going to consider anybody coming out of the prison system at all. So this comes down to, once again, a matter of perception in terms of who the people are who are coming out of the prison system. What we're saying, and I think what you're saying, is that there's still a sizable chunk of people out there who simply want to get on with their lives, who don't want to go back to mugging and thugging, who don't want to go back to drugs, who don't want to go back to the corner. They just need help in terms of crossing that bridge. Am I right, or am I wrong, or am I being too ridiculously idealistic?
No, you're right. And the thing is, the media plays a big role in that. You know, and that's why I do what I do. I carry a big load on my back when I go to speak, because I want people to know there's a lot of us that do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I carry that message with me. Mm-hmm. And I tell them it's a lot of people that do the wrong thing. But judge case by case, you know, but understand there's a lot of us out here that walk past you every day, that go to work, that pay taxes, that take care of their kids, that take care of their community, that do things right,
mm-hmm.
that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what you need to understand. You know, and to give a person a chance to just come home mean a lot to these men and women.
Anybody in any metropolitan area every day, every single day, driving, walking, shopping, you're coming to contact with 40 or 50 people that have been touched by the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can't say, hey, I live 20 miles from the city, whatever city that you live away from. You can't say that I'm 20 miles away, I'm immune from that problem. Every single day you're coming into contact with scores of people who've been caught up in the criminal justice system. So I guess the question is, do you want them employed? Do you want them on meds? Do you want their mental health issues taken care of? Or do you want to place yourself at risk? I think that's the question everybody needs to ask themselves.
Yeah, but I think what a lot of people need to understand also is that it also deals with money. Martha Stewart is an ex-offender.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't look at Martha Stewart like that.
Mm-hmm.
So classism plays a big role in a lot of this also.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So this is what people need to understand also. They wouldn't look at Martha Stewart like they look at me.
Right.
You know, and that's another thing that plays a big role in a lot of things that's taking place. You know, if I had money, I can do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was a big rapper, if I was a big sports player, I can do what I want to do and wouldn't have to worry about you giving me a job.
Mm-hmm.
I got my own job.
But the vast majority of people coming out of the prison system don't have those resources at all.
They don't.
I mean, it's hard enough to reconnect with the family, and oftentimes the guy or the woman has burned their bridges with the family.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times the family will say, okay, you can sleep on the couch in the basement, but here are the rules.
Yeah.
And last time you stole from me, and last time you argued with me, and last time it was really nasty, and last time the police came crashing through my door, you're on probation. Not only are you on parole from the prison system, you're on my probation. So even when you come home, a lot of times the relationships with the family aren't that very good.
And guess what? You know what I tell people when I talk to them? If you burn those bridges, it's up to you to go to your family and make amends.
Right.
If I come home and I broke those bridges with my family,
mm-hmm.
I need to go to them and make amends. And
mm-hmm.
if they tell me, Eddie, we only have a closet for you to sleep in,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get me a blanket or a bed
right.
and put it in the closet and do what I got to do.
You got to do what you got to do.
You know, that's what I'm going to do.
I'm going to give the website several times, one by one, O-N-E-B-Y, the number one, incorporated.org. The email address for Eddie, eddieeddieellis_EBE@yahoo.com. Again, they're going to be in the show notes. All right, where do we go to from here? I mean, it is, you know, I'm at the end of my criminal justice career. I've spent 42 years in the criminal justice system, started off as a cop. Looking at this whole issue of people coming out of the prison system, I sometimes get discouraged because I get the sense that 50% of the folks nationally who are coming out of the prison systems are employed. 50% are unemployed. That almost guarantees higher rates of recidivism. I take a look at the numbers of people being treated for their substance abuse, people coming out of the prison system. It's increased, but it's not increasing by leaps and bounds. You're only talking about 20, 25%. That means 75% of those folks out there with mental health issues or substance abuse issues, they're not being treated. So we're basically not, you know, those services, for all intents and purposes, in most states in this country simply aren't there. And I say to myself, well, you know, by the time I retire, I'm not quite sure they are going to be there. Do you ever get discouraged by this whole topic?
I do sometimes. But I understand that for me, I live this life personally, and I have a lot of friends that possibly would die in prison. And I just want to do the right thing by trying to help a lot of people out. This and the situation is very personal to me.
Of course.
And sometimes I lose sleep behind it. You know, I feel sick behind it. I mean, everything. You know, I try to do everything I can to help people. You know, I mean, I just went to Pennsylvania to talk to some young people. And they was writing me, and I just found out one of the young people, I sent a letter to his family to beat him home. I said, I'm going to send a letter to his house, you know, to surprise him.
Because
he was like, you know, I don't know if you would really write me anyway. You know, so I sent a letter to his house to surprise him, let him know, yeah, I'll mentor you. You know, even you in Pennsylvania, I'm from D.C., you can call me and write me. And his sister called me and told me he got shot. He was doing good. He got shot. I mean, it really hurt me, you know. So, but I understand that, you know, everybody won't change. You can't change everybody. But to hear that a young guy lost his life and he was trying to do the right thing, make me want to get up early in the morning and try it again, you know. But I tell people that's working in these systems that try to give people that's been in this system the chance to work with you, you know, because it'll make your job a little easier.
Sure.
You know, and so that's what I've been doing.
But so many people come out of prison so hard. So many people come out of prison, they don't trust anybody. They don't even trust their own families. They're not even quite sure they trust themselves. And isn't that, again, one of the biggest barriers? We started off the program with, we have programs here at Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and we've got some great programs, but the people running those programs have the power to put you back in prison. How can you trust that person in that program when you know that if you don't succeed, there's a possibility of you going back to the prison system? The bottom line is, at what point do you allow yourself to be helped by other people? At what point do you come to grips with saying, I've got to depend upon other people if I'm going to get on by?
Yeah, well, you know, when you say hard, you know, unfortunately, when you're dealing with institutions, that's, you know, that go across the board. Police, when they come out of the police force, retire, they still act like police.
Mm-hmm.
Military, when you retire from the military for a long time, you still act like you're still in the military. You might get up and buff your boots and still, you know. So it's the same thing with prison. But, you know, when you say dealing with these programs, sometimes you find some CSOs might put you in a program that may not fit you.
Right.
I don't want to be in a group setting.
Right.
I've been locked down for 13 years. Right. I don't want to be in a group setting and talk about my life. I don't trust these guys.
Right.
You know, so my thing is this a right fit for this person?
Mm-hmm.
This what you got to figure out. You've been a CSO for 2 years. You want to force me in a group to talk about my life in front of all these young guys that's sitting here playing, and I'm on a different mindset than these people. So this is stuff that people got to be aware of, you know, and this is the type of stuff when I got the chance to talk to the CSO, this is the type of stuff that I tried to make them aware of, because sometimes some people will back out of things because of things like that.
We said 730,000 people coming out of the prison system. We said 50% go back after 3 years, according to national statistics. So let's just round it off. Let's say 350,000, half of that 700,000, 350,000, that's a huge city. Mm-hmm. 350,000 are back in the prison system after 3 years. If we had all the programs in the prison, the employment programs, the, you know, so the guy comes out and he gets a welding certificate. He gets his GED. He gets drug treatment. He gets help with his mental health issues. And those programs follow him into the community. Out of the 350,000 people who are supposed to go back to prison, what percentage of them who ordinarily wouldn't go back to prison?
It's hard to say, you know, because now I know people that was in the union for a long time that haven't been locked up saying now the union changing.
Mm-hmm.
Now the union saying people with charges are being kicked out of the union. So if these people come home and been certified by union,
mm-hmm.
now they're being kicked out of the union because they have no support from the union because they have a felon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically, you know, they just out there working or mm-hmm. maybe not working.
Mm-hmm.
They doing side work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it varies from person to person. But I really think if a lot of people given a chance, a lot of people will take advantage of it. But sometimes things just change. You know, I had a friend was supposed to come home and live with his sister. And the sister and the husband got into an argument. And the husband told the sister, I don't want him here.
Happens all the time.
So now my friend whole plan changes.
Right.
He don't have nowhere to go.
Right.
You know, so, and I'm like, I want to try to change the mindset of we can't just give up. But it's not that easy for some people. When I set my mind on 2 years, this is where I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm going to do. Because
mm-hmm.
we need to set goals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my last 6 months, that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had no answer for it.
The bottom line, we in the criminal justice system throughout the country, we really don't do a very good job of preparing people to leave that prison.
No.
We, nationally speaking, we really don't do a very good job of providing services. I mean, we provide supervision,
yeah,
but we really don't do a very good job in terms of providing those services. And when I stand before different people in terms of either doing radio or in a group or talking to key individuals, you know, you start talking about, hey, you know, this is something that we need if we're going to reduce the financial burden, the tax burden on your particular state and your particular area. And a lot of times they just look at me like I've got three heads. So if we don't have those resources on the table, I believe we could cut recidivism down significantly. I mean, the national research says between 10 and 20%. 10 to 20% of those 350,000 who go back to the prison system, I mean, you know, you're talking about tens of thousands of people not going back. You're talking about tens of thousands of crimes not committed. You're talking about states not building prisons at the cost of $350 million and $200 million a year. I'm sorry, $20 million a year to maintain.
And loss of schools.
And loss of schools and everything. Else. I mean, it's significant. It has a real impact on the lives of human beings.
It really does. And the thing that really frustrates me about that situation there is this. I remember a few years ago, I asked the director of the BOP, you know, when does reentry start?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when a person, you know, comes to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the most politically correct thing to say, but that's not true. You know, y'all really don't start us for reentry then, because if a person come in with 20 years, how are you going to start him or her with reentry?
Right.
You know, and the thing is, you don't prepare us coming out.
Right.
And I tried to present my reentry books to them saying these are books for D.C. inmates because D.C. inmates don't have the opportunity like other states when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
To have, like, Lorton. Lorton was a place where we were there, and we had reentry.
And for the people outside of D.C., Lorton was a prison real close by to D.C.
Yeah, it was our own, like, penitentiaries.
Right.
That had resources that, for when we come home, we knew the stuff, where the things were. And, you know, they don't have that for D.C. inmates.
Right, because D.C. inmates go into the federal system, and they go all throughout the country.
Yeah.
Okay. You got 1 minute, Eddie. What is the biggest issue that people listening to this program need to hear?
I just think the biggest issue that people need to hear is give people a chance. And understanding a lot of us need, you know, the opportunity to change and, you know, fight, you know, as much as you can for these men and women that's coming home, for them to get an opportunity to make it in their life, you know, because if you don't, it's going to keep being, you know, bad things happening in our community. I'm out here trying to fight, you know, and there's nothing wrong with trying to fight to have a good community.
The bottom line is community support. Without community support, none of this is going to happen.
That's right.
All right. Eddie Ellis, Eddie B. Ellis Jr. Again, it's just an amazing array of documentaries, front page newspaper articles in the Washington Post and other newspapers, congressional hearings. You've just led a charmed life, and we thank you for leading the life that you have. Eddie's website is onebyoneincorporated.org. It's O-N-E-B-Y, the number one, I-N-C.org. His email address is Eddie Ellis, eddieellis_EBE@yahoo.com. All of this will be in the show notes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I've been your host, Leonard Sipes. We do appreciate all of your feedback. We appreciate your phone calls. We appreciate your emails. We appreciate your comments. Please feel free to provide comments and criticisms and suggestions in terms of future shows. And I want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.